This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
By the way, on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. Yeah, I enjoy Oklahoma City misery and embarrassment. It's one of my favorite things.
I can't blame you.
I'm admittedly pathetic and shallow about it. It is Danny and Gallant. The Seahawks getting set. They'll take off to Green Bay this afternoon. What do you call it? It's the Soviet Republic of Green Bay?
In Soviet Green Bay, fans shovel you. Yes, because they are all owners of the team. They all have an equal stake.
Wait, what accent was that?
I don't know.
Lydia,
Just work with me. It might have been Russian. Lydia's making a face.
Midwestern Russian.
Yeah, it's somewhere in between.
It was a merger between the two because the Patriots the Packers have asked for volunteers, 700 people to come and shovel snow because there's potential accumulation. With that looming in the background, with that forecast, we bring in Michael Bumpus for Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Bump, how are you now?
Awesome. How are you guys doing?
We're doing wonderful. We're very excited for Sunday's match at the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. And, Bup, I've got a question for you to open things up. We all know how important Russell Wilson is going to be to the Hawks in Sunday's game. But who are the three most important Hawks not named Russell Wilson for Sunday?
The first one, man, I got to go with DK Metcalf. You know, he had a coming out party, his first playoff game last week against the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm looking to see if he can repeat that. He'll be going up against Kevin King, a good corner over there in Green Bay. Has about
go
five
dogs,
or six
go games. Dogs.
What? Oh no, Lee, don't give it to me right now. Too early. But you know, Kevin King's a good ball player, but he gives up a lot of yards, about 17 yards per reception. So I'm just looking to see if DK can do what he did last week. Doesn't have to go for 160 or whatever he did, but I just need him to make some big plays. The second guy I'm looking at is Clowney. We talked to Pete Carroll on Monday. I asked him, what was the difference in your defense? Two words, Jadeveon Clowney. So he has to get after the quarterback. We all know about Aaron Rodgers. He can throw the ball from many different angles. He's deceptively quick in the pocket. He can make things happen. And if they're going to get their hands on him, it's going to start with a pass rush and Clowney. The last guy, Dave Wyman, don't beat me up. I'm going to go with Myers, the kicker. You know, if it is snowing, if the offense isn't able to generate yards, it's going to come down to field goals. Can this guy be clutch on the tundra in the Midwest in Green Bay and make some clutch field goals? Myers is going to have to make his money this week.
No, we're going to have to start talking about milk again.
No.
I don't want to get back into that conversation.
No, we've refused. I've just completely denied it. I've stopped drinking the milk and not told anybody. I'm just like, fine, I'm just not even going to look at that anymore.
Now the fridge smells.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm just not going to address it. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about the spoiled milk in the room. This game's going to be fun. DK Metcalf, is he their best deep threat right now? I know all things being equal, Tyler Lockett is, and this isn't sort of a criticism. It seems like things have changed with Lockett, and I don't know if he's capable, just physically capable of doing what he did earlier. Is Metcalf now their best deep threat?
Yeah, he is, and he should be, honestly. When you got that frame, you're that big, you're that fast, that's why they brought you to Seattle, to be that deep threat. Tyler Lockett has made a living catching the deep ball, but now he doesn't have to. Now he can be what he looks like. He can be the slot guy going across the middle, the third and short, picking up the first down. So DK should be the guy, and I think he's molding into being that guy, and he's showing that he can handle the pressure, man. This guy's a rookie. I mean, every week it seems like he's getting better. He's had a couple games where he stalled out, but as of late, man, he's balling. He's going up and getting the ball at the highest point. He's attacking the football. He's not waiting for the football to come to him. So with that frame, that size, that speed, DK should be your deep threat.
Question two. Bump. Mike Leach takes the Mississippi State job. He said he just couldn't turn down the opportunity to the SEC. I'll be interested to see. my own theory is that Mike Leach is going to pull an upset or two every single season, and he'll probably also lose a game or two that even when he's got a ranked opponent, he shouldn't lose to. But I think he'll be interesting. For the Cougs, what kind of coach do you think they should target now?
You need a coach who is familiar with Washington State. It's a special place. You know, it's not in a city. It's in Eastern Washington. It's a small town. There's nothing but the university in Pullman. And I think they got to go after a guy who's been there. And the first guy that comes to mind, which I've heard many people talk about, is Grinch, Alex Grinch. You know, a few of his players are still there. You know, he was only there a couple of years ago. He went to Ohio State. Now he was at Oklahoma. He's looking to be a head coach. Why not come back to the place where you kind of got your start as a defensive coordinator? And it's all about knowing personnel and knowing the area. You can't just bring anybody into Pullman. That's why Leach worked, because he was an awkward type of guy, and Pullman is an awkward type of place. Now, you don't need a Mike Leach, but you need a guy who understands the town and who understands the personnel that they already have there, because if you bring in a guy who's going to change everything up, it's going to take 3 or 4 years for Wazoo to be competitive again. Why not bring in a guy who understands the area, understands the personnel, and has already been there? So if I am Chun, I'm going after Alex Grinch.
Question three. We were talking about DK Metcalf just a little bit ago, and Bump, I'm curious as to if your ears... Do ears light up? I don't really think they do.
No, they do not.
But do your ears light up anyway when you hear this statistic? The Packers gave up 15 pass plays of 40 yards or more this season. That is tied with the Philadelphia Eagles, who we just saw last weekend, were second worst in the National Football League. This has got to mean that the Seahawks should be chucking it deep again, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could mean that. I don't think that they should force it off of that stat, and I don't think that they will. That just lets you know that there are big plays out there to be made, and that's what DK does. He makes the big play as of late. So I don't think he changed anything. You don't look at that stat and say, hey, we're just going to force the football down the field. You still got to start with your run. You still got to take what the defense is giving you. But that's very encouraging. You got DK on one side, and we talked about DK being the D threat. Let's not sleep on Tyler Lockett. He doesn't have to be the D threat now, but he's still capable of being the D threat. And David Moore, too, as well. You know, that third receiver has kind of been in the shuffle. We've seen David Moore. We've seen Malik Turner. We've seen Dron Brown. We've seen a lot of guys in that position. I think David Moore is kind of emerging as that number three receiver. All three of those guys, and then you throw in Malik Turner. He's healthy this week, getting through the concussion. All of those guys can go deep. So Russell likes to throw the deep ball. I believe he's second in the league with passes over 40 yards behind Patrick Mahomes. So it's there. Do you change your offense? Do you change your approach because of that stat? No, but just know that those plays are there to be made.
That is Blue 42 with Michael Bumpus. Bump, it's interesting talking about the Cougs coach. Alex Grinch is a great name. A lot of people have also mentioned Bo Baldwin, who was the former head coach at Eastern Washington, who's now the offensive coordinator at Cal. He's someone that would know the terrain here. Mike Leach, and none of this, Mike Leach is an incredibly successful coach who did great things at Washington State and got them to a level where every year they're going to go to a bowl game. But he also kind of imposed his own recruiting approach. They didn't recruit Washington as much as they had in recent years before his arrival, and that's not to say that Leach's approach was unsuccessful, because it was really good, but other coaches have gotten more out of this state than Leach was able to. It makes some sense if they would go after someone with a little more local ties.
Yeah, that's the knock on WSU and UW. They don't take care of home. There are a lot of guys who leave the state to go play somewhere else. I get UW is a national brand. They can recruit wherever they want to. I get that Mike Leach has a certain type of player that he wants, typically from Florida, Texas, California. I get it. But if you're not taking care of home, then what are you doing really? What does the Apple Cup mean if you're not taking care of home? You hear a guy like Borgie talk about the Apple Cup. It didn't mean much to him. He's from Colorado. I get it. It takes some buy-in, but you got to take care of the state of Washington. And per capita, Washington has some guys out here, man. I think since I've been here, I've been on the west side of the mountains for about 10 years now. And every year, man, I'm going out and seeing these high school guys play. And they're comparable to Cali guys. There might not be as many guys as good as California guys or Texas guys. But every year, there's about 10 to 15, 20 guys who can play D1 football at WSU and UW. And a lot of these guys are leaving. So when at whatever school you're at, you can be in Kansas. You got to take care of Kansas. You can be in Nebraska. You got to take care of Nebraska. I would love to see a guy come in and make sure that the best players in Washington stay here.
Is that hard to do, though, with the resources that Washington State doesn't have and just the location compared to other schools that are in the conference? It's difficult to get to Pullman.
Yeah, it is difficult, you know. It's hard to sell Pullman. I'm not saying that they got to get the five-star out of Washington, but there's some three-stars, there's some two-stars, there's some solid football players who end up going elsewhere. So it's all about recruiting and how you approach it. And obviously UW has the upper hand when it comes to recruiting. You're in Seattle. You can sell the space, you know, the stadium's on the water. You know, to get guys to go to the east side, to Eastern Washington, you gotta have your stuff together. But how do you sell that program? Mike Leach sold it on offense. If Alex Grinch comes here, he can sell it on his defense. So it's a tricky game that they have to play on the other side of the mountains, but it can be done. Are you going to get a five-star? Probably not. I can't tell you the last time that Washington State University got a five-star, but I'm talking about those second and third tier athletes, those guys who are going to fill your rosters and fill the depth. You have to take care of home.
My bad. Bo Baldwin took the job at Cal Poly. I didn't realize he had taken the head coaching job. I missed that news when he left Cal to go to Cal Poly. So that would complicate that and probably make that a tougher hire. One other name. And this is completely not due to any source, just rattling around in my brain. Steve Sarkisian would be an interesting hire. He didn't get the Mississippi State job, which was mentioned. I don't know if the Cougs would be willing to hire a guy that has a Husky item on his resume. I think that would be an interesting hire. And Pat Chun is the AD that's making the hire. And one thing to remember about him, he hired Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic. A coaching hire that was well outside the box. Nobody really expected that. It did great things for that school because it vaulted them into a different level. Not only did they win when Kiffin was there before he ended up moving on, but now they replaced him with Willie Taggart, who is the former coach at Florida State. It did great things for the university, so that might be another thing to consider when you look at the kind of coach that might end up at Washington State.
Yeah, if Sark is interested, you have to entertain it. The thing that I would like to see is a guy who's committed to 4 to 5 years. I think WSU is at a state to where somebody can come here and use it as a stepping stone. Forget a stepping stone. That's what I was concerned about with Leach. I thought Leach would be here maybe 3 years and then he'd get out of there. So I appreciate the time that Leach has put in. All I ask is that WSU make sure they have a guy who's here for the long run. Finish out your contract. You know, don't just use WSU as a notch under your belt, something to put on the resume. And that's hard to find. You know, that's how you end up with a Paul Wolf a few years back because he's a local guy and you know he's going to be committed. But it's a balance. You got to find a guy who's committed and who's ready for this opportunity. You can't just hire some random guy. If Sark is interested, you have to entertain it. But something tells me that he's going to jump ship as soon as he gets an opportunity to.
This is a random suggestion. And I know that he's become a bit of an internet meme because of that picture that may or may not be of him with a shark.
Oh, no, you can't hire the guy that was hopping on the shark.
But he played at Eastern Washington as a quarterback. He was a graduate assistant and a coach at Eastern Washington. He's from Montana. He's coached in the Mountain West. Jim McElwain, it's not the craziest idea if you can get past the whole, you know,
if that's
thing.
The only thing on his resume against him, I think we can accept it.
Yeah.
Where's he gonna? Where's he gonna find any sharks on the Palouse?
That's the thing. He'll be sharkless away from it.
Bump. It's awesome to have you on. I'm looking forward next week, and hopefully we're building up to another Seahawks playoff game after they take care of business with the Packers. Thanks so much, and
thanks,
have a great
Bump.
Weekend.
No problem, guys. Have a good one.
That is Michael Bumpus with us via the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. That game with the Seahawks, this is, and talked about it, this is the point where they've gotten to this point and have not been able to get over the hump. That's a really interesting stat, Paul, about the big plays down the field, because the temptation is to say that Seattle is this plodding offense, and that actually, we saw it against Philadelphia, the big plays down the field, that was how they took the lead with the touchdown pass. The game-clinching touchdown was throw to DK Metcalf, and the game-clinching play when they sealed it, another deep throw to DK Metcalf.
the Packers have a cornerback who's 36 years old. Tre'Mon Williams.
Tre'Mon Williams.
He has been in the league for a really long time. And you know what? You got to give him credit for being able to stick in the league this long as a cornerback. I think Jonathan Joseph with the Houston Texans, who I covered for a while also, a lot of credit to stick in the NFL because that is a position where speed is of the utmost importance. But he's 36 years old. He's not the biggest guy. I wonder if that's someone that you can take advantage of matchups against from time to time, not just if it's a DK Metcalf, if it's Tyler Lockett, if it's David Moore, if he's out there, if Malik Turner's back out on the football field, and we'll see. I'm not 100% sure what's going on that front, but is that someone else who can stretch the field? And I'm not saying turn it into a shot play kind of game or like a five-year-old playing Madden where you're just running four verts all game long, but I do think that it is smart to take shots in this game if you have the opportunity to. And you also have a rookie safety in Darnell Savage. He's a young player. He's very talented, but that means that potentially he could be one of those guys that gets tricked on the play fake. So, yeah, if that's the number of big plays that the Packers are giving up, you got to test them.
15 plays of 40 yards or more this season. My favorite random fact heading into this game is about the Seahawks. They're plus 26 in the third quarter.
Wow.
It's the only period that they've outscored their opponents. They're minus 29 in the other three periods, and they've outscored opponents 9-0 in overtime, which is how they have an overall net positive differential, but plus 26 in the third quarter. There's two reasons I can think of for that. The first is Seattle usually defers, meaning they're going to choose to get the ball to start the second half, which it would make sense then that they have more points in the third quarter than in the first quarter because they're more often starting with the ball in the third quarter. The second thing, though, and this is they give up the least amount of points in the third quarter, just 56. And I think that speaks to something about the defensive adjustments they make or the improvements that they make at halftime.
Second half adjustments. Okay, so who would you credit that? Is that Pete Carroll? Is that Ken Norton Jr.?
I'm tempted to give it more to the linebackers, Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. In their ability, and you heard KJ earlier this week when he was on with Bob David Moore talking about at halftime that they were communicating with Cody Barton of, hey, you know all the things we practice, that's out the window, this is what we're doing now. I think that Seattle's linebackers, because of their experience, recognize what an opponent is trying to do to them and are able to adjust over the course of the game. And that's not to say that the coaches don't make those adjustments or can't recognize them, but I think the ability to implement those, the ability for the defense to really take heed of it, I think it goes back to the way that their linebackers play. The defense has not been a better second-half defense because they've given up an awful lot of points in the fourth quarter. But in that third quarter, they tend to be significantly better.
It's not just them, too. I think Quandre Diggs factors in here, and Quandre on Wednesday when we were talking with him about that, how he had apparently been communicating specifically with KJ Wright about plays that he saw coming. He said, look, I'm a safety. They can barely hear me for the most part. But he's also got that kind of intelligence that I feel like is a much needed addition to a Seahawks secondary that's, let's face it, is very young, is very green. I mean, Shaquille Griffin's essentially, before the Quandre Diggs trade happens, your vet. Like, he is your best veteran player that actually on the field is a plus player. And it's important to have someone like that on the back end, too. So I can buy into that, Danny, that it's the players that are maybe turning the Seahawks defense into a more effective unit and a better unit, especially in the red zone, because that's what that stat indicates, the amount of points given up in the third quarter in the second half. And hopefully they'll be able to keep that. Make that happen in the second quarter. Hopefully those adjustments will happen earlier in the game so we won't find the Seahawks trying to dig their way out of a hole from yet another sluggish start, which we know they are prone to.
Are you worried about a sluggish start? I don't find myself. That's not my biggest concern entering this game.
I am actually, I would, if I had to pick between the two teams who is going to have the more sluggish start, I'm going to pick the young football team that is coming off of a bye week with a lot of young players around Aaron Rodgers. I feel that is something that easily could happen. You're at home, you probably feel very good about yourselves, and yeah, you look at the Seahawks and you probably think, okay, they're a little banged up. I can see the Packers, maybe not overlooking them, but I can see them taking them maybe a little bit lightly just because of the home element of it. It's a young football team. This is the first time that a lot of these guys are playing in a game. I mean, they haven't made the playoffs since 2016. So some of guys on that team have been in the playoffs before, but it's not a lot. And it's going to, I think, be one of those games where they are going to take some time to maybe get up to speed. So I'm hoping that means the Seahawks can take advantage early and give themselves a lead to sit on, which will make it a lot easier, I think, for a pass rush that we know has been extremely inconsistent, no matter if they've had 12 sacks the last 2 weeks.
Seahawks certainly should be the team with sort of the quote-unquote advantage with playoff experience. The Packers haven't been in the playoffs either the past 2 years. The average age on the two teams is similar, but not only did Seattle make the playoffs last year, but they've also played a previous playoff game this season. That idea that kind of you feel better about yourself being at home, that gets said a lot, and I know that I say it and feel it. Why do we always assume that, though? Because don't most players, like, have things that happen at home? Like, I think about, like, when I'm at home, I'm not necessarily feeling better about myself when I'm at home.
Sometimes I hate traveling,
it's like,
though.
Like, the dishes are piled up in the sink. My wife's mad at me. I'm not able to do those. Like, the different things that you have that you're dealing with, like, sometimes I'm like, God, I just wish I could get away from everything and not worry about it. Like,
yeah.
It might not be an advantage to be surrounded by the headaches of being at home.
Is it LeBron that would do that on the road where he, or even at home, he would, like, stay in a hotel so he would replicate some of the road conditions? I thought it might have been LeBron because the same mentality, right? You get into this routine when you get home where it's involving chores. It's involving, you can't fully concentrate on the task at hand.
I need to talk to LeBron James about how to
sell it might be him.
A significant other on that idea of, like, it's really so I need to focus. Like, the idea that, like, hey, this is the best part. Yeah, this is the best part. This is what I need. I just don't want to be around. Like, instead, he gets into the hotel bed. He's like, I don't have to worry about what I'm watching on TV. I can watch whatever I want. I don't have to wear pants if I don't want to.
Or make your bed.
Yeah. Someone else does it for you. It's even better.
You guys are terrible. Absolutely awful.
I'll take it untucked, thank you.
It is Danny and Gallant. The Seahawks are back to the level of the video game that they can never get past. They just can't get past it. This is, whether it's a boss they can't beat, this is the spot they cannot get past. What's the key to advancing on the road in the divisional playoffs? We'll tell you next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
You ever had a level in a video game that you just cannot get past?
For me,
and this is going to show my age, Super Mario Brothers. Original Super Mario Brothers, actual arcade game, and I believe it was level 6-1. It required a running leap of faith in which you had to time landing on a flying turtle so you would bounce onto something. It was a jump that you could not make without extra assistance, and it probably took a good $15 and an older, wiser person to show me how to beat that level. The Seahawks are at the level of the video game they can't beat. I've covered this team going back to their first Super Bowl appearance in 2005. I've seen them get to this level six different times where they win a playoff game on the road or at home in the first round, the wild card round, and then they go on the road for the divisional playoff game. They face a team that was having a bye, and sometimes they lose in heartbreaking fashion. Sometimes they get blown out, but they always lose. Six times that has happened. Six times they've played on the road in the divisional round of the playoffs in the past 20 years, six times they've lost. They have not won on the road in this round of the playoffs since 1983 when they beat the Miami Dolphins.
That is really something else. And for me, Danny, if I was to compare it to a video game, it would be one of the last levels in Halo on Legendary when you have to take on the entire Flood and you basically end up dying time after time after time and after time after time again. 1983, I mean, I wasn't alive then. I don't even know if my parents were together at that point in time. That is a long time ago. And
1983 was a good year. It was Dan Marino's rookie year. 1983, you would have had the dawn of MTV. That was starting to become popular. Friday night videos. The Friday night video fights were a big deal. Def Leppard, Photograph was a longtime reigning champ. But yes, quite a long time ago that was there. What's the key for them if they're going to get past this level?
Well, I think, first off, take care of the football, which is the obvious one. Secondly, I think that they're going to have to run
the football. And I'm not saying just do it to a degree where you are not asking Russell Wilson to do most of the things that you want to do offensively, but there's going to need to be a healthy balance. You have to keep Za'Darius Smith, who I think is going to be the most impactful Packer potentially in this game, more so than Aaron Rodgers, more so than Aaron Jones. You have to find a way to keep him off balance. You have to make it so that when the Packers move him around, that it's not always necessarily advantageous for them. And I think one of the ways to do that is to run the football. And I think a very, very big development for the Seahawks is going to be the health of one of Green Bay's defensive linemen. This guy's big. He's one of those players that is able to create pressure up the middle. Kenny Clark, he's got a back injury. He was limited in practice yesterday, but I think it's important to note that Matt LeFleur said about him that he was really limited. I suppose if we are to look at Pete Carroll and some of the ways that he describes injuries, it would probably be more like a questionable doubtful, which I think he may or may not have said before. I know he's done positive questionable with guys like Bobby Wagner before. That's something I think they can do to take that that Packers pass rush from keep them from just being able to pin their ears back, as they say, and run straight up field, because that's their kind of pass rush. It's one of those, we're going to generate it by running up field. And, yeah, just run right at them. Make Za'Darius Smith work.
I got to say that I really like this idea of someone being very questionable. He was very limited. Like, he was barely able to do anything. Like, well, why did he even practice? I'm not really sure. I think they're going to need to have multiple big plays downfield. You said that the Packers have given up 15 passes of 40 yards or more.
As many as the Eagles this season, yes.
Tied for second most in the regular season. Seattle's equation for a explosive plays is runs of 12 yards or more and passes of 16 yards or more. I think Seattle's going to have at least five of those explosive plays on offense.
Well, that's what you needed against the Philadelphia Eagles to get it done. And the funny thing is, no matter how it never felt in doubt in that game, did it? You never felt like the Eagles were going to win that one. I, in particular, thought that when the Eagles found themselves in the red zone, that they just were not going to be able to find a way to score with Josh McCown. But at the end of the day, I mean, they only won that game by 8 points. And it was never convincing, and it was against a really banged-up Philadelphia Eagles squad. And they had five plays like that in this game. They're going to need, I think, the same thing to happen, Danny. But it's going to be either Marshawn Lynch or Travis Homer who is going to keep this defense honest, who is going to help the Seahawks find themselves in a situation where it's not third and 10. Because I think that is probably the most unrepeatable thing that the Seahawks did last week. All of those third and long situations that they overcame, that's just hard to do. And to expect to do it in back-to-back weeks, that's just not respecting the level of competition in the NFL.
And it's also, yeah, overall in the NFL, it's nothing about the given defense. Is you can't have your quarterback and say, hey, you know what? We were great on third down this game because we converted five different third downs requiring 10 yards or more. That's bailing out. That's your quarterback bailed you out from an offense that kept you behind the sticks. You were not on schedule, all those things. You got bailed out in that game, and you can't count on getting bailed out again. Like if that's what it takes, not to say it can't happen, but you're leaving yourself very, very vulnerable in this game. Is it more important for Seattle to force Green Bay to pass or to keep Aaron Rodgers from picking them apart? Because I think Seattle faces a bit of a decision here. I think they have to stop the run, and if that means conceding some of the things that Rodgers will get over the middle, that's you're just going to have to live with that, because you can't get beat over the top, and you cannot have Aaron Jones consistently running against this game. I'm more worried if Jones rushes for 100 yards than I am if Aaron Rodgers throws for 350.
There is a nice piece by Robert Mays for The Ringer about Aaron Jones. It tells the story of his growing up in El Paso, Texas. He's a small guy, 5'9", 208, but his teammates think the same of him that I do. This is a guy that just hits the hole so fast. He's so quick to accelerate towards the line of scrimmage. And in his last four games, the guy was averaging 6 yards a touch, 136.5 yards from scrimmage in each of those games. Like, he's on a roll right now. If he has a successful game, I think that's going to make it very easy for the Packers to pick Seattle apart. I don't know that you necessarily give Aaron Rodgers the Andy Dalton and Matt Schaub treatment of, all right, well, you can have what you want, but in the red zone, it's going to be difficult for you, because I still think you have to respect Aaron Rodgers' accuracy in the red zone and his ability to pinpoint passes. But if I have to pick between what's the bigger element of the Packers' offense that has made them win 13 games this season, it's been their ability to run the football. And I think that, yeah, I think making sure that you do not give up more than 4 yard rushes on a regular basis is probably the priority. That's going to mean more base 4-3. That's going to mean a lot of frustrated Seahawks fans getting annoyed by Aaron Rodgers picking them apart over the middle, possibly, should he go over the middle. But I think that's the strategy. I think that's how you go about it. And you hope that Aaron Rodgers continues to have his accuracy issues like he has in the last couple of weeks.
It's important to measure when passing yards are given up, because it's different when you give up. The 400 yards that Seattle gave up passing to Matt Schaub should come with an asterisk.
So hollow, because it was at the end, right.
It was so many of them were in the second half. And that's not to mean that, hey, you should totally discount it. Look, when you give up that volume of passing yards,
still noteworthy.
No matter what the situation. But it's different when you've got a team that's down 20 points and they're like,
yeah,
look, all we've got to do is throw to get it back. And in some respects, the game was closer against Cincinnati, but that's some of the reason Dalton had all those numbers too, was because Seattle got a lead, and then they kind of went into a shell on offense, or they stopped being effective, or whether it was by design or just because they were incompetent, they couldn't score anymore. And Seattle's defensive approach was, okay, we're actually not going to take that many chances. We're just going to keep everything in front of us until and unless we get in a situation where they're like, okay, we need to stop, otherwise we're going to fall behind. So some of it will depend on how Aaron Rodgers were to get those yards, but I am much more worried. If you tell me that Aaron Jones has 100 yards rushing, I'm like, uh-oh. Not only is that probably mean that they're trying to protect the clock, and they certainly weren't behind, but it also means that, man, they were really able to effectively control the game in a way that's not going to be positive for Seattle.
And he's a small guy, but he's a three-down running back, and he's someone that is also really capable in the passing game. He's someone that actually concerns me out of the backfield possibly more than he does as a running back, because this is a guy that they have asked to do wide receiver things, and while he has had the occasional drop, this is a guy that had almost 70 targets as a receiver out of the backfield this year. I am nervous about the idea of him lining out wide and running jet sweeps and also like a wheel route. I feel that a wheel route is something that potentially could be in the works, and he's going to be open if he runs one of those, probably against this linebacker core. He's the scariest player on the Packers offense.
It's not Aaron Rodgers anymore, which is surprising.
Right.
But this year, Aaron Rodgers hasn't really been Aaron Rodgers, and Paul found the numbers that will prove that. You'll hear him next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
This has been a different year for Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers quarterback. He has not been one of the best quarterbacks in the game from a statistical standpoint. You can make a case that it's changed because the offense has changed, and that, in an interesting point made by Mike Sando of The Athletic, the irony of this matchup between the Seahawks and Packers is that this is really the only game featuring two tier one quarterbacks, and both offensive play callers want to shrink the game and delay turning it over to their passers. But it's been a little bit different, Danny, for Aaron Rodgers.
It has, and it's watching his game against Detroit, the regular season finale, and just looking at it, I was like, it wasn't just uncharacteristically inaccurate for Aaron Rodgers. It was inaccurate for any NFL quarterback, where you're watching it and you're like, what is this? This is, McNabb used to have stretches like that where he'd go for a quarter in which he just couldn't seem to not be able to aim the ball. And that's how Rodgers looked for the first three quarters of that game. He has not looked like the same player this year.
He had the NFL's worst bad throw percentage. For those who don't know what that is, per Pro Football Reference, a bad throw is a throw that wasn't catchable with normal effort. He had the highest percentage, 21.2% of his passes, which is an alarming amount. Only Jameis Winston, Jared Goff, and Tom Brady, who is not the same Tom Brady, physically had more bad throws than Aaron Rodgers. And also Rodgers, this is a guy who used to extend plays, who used to find ways to, while extending plays, chuck it deep and find a receiver. 31 throwaways this season, which is also very high up. I think only second to Tom Brady this year.
Is it the offense or is it the player? It's possible that this is Aaron Rodgers declining and he's on the back nine. It's possible that the switch to a different offense has in some ways muted some of the things that he does better, or he's being, it's constricting him more than he used to be constricted. I would tend to think it goes to the latter of those two things, but that's actually the part that makes me most worried about him, because they changed coaches. Whether Green Bay will say this out front or not, they changed coaches because they felt that Mike McCarthy was no longer getting the best out of Aaron Rodgers. Because
right.
They felt like whether it was the two of them being at a crossroads or they didn't get along, they chose the coach over the quarterback. And now they've got a new coach in there, and the quarterback isn't necessarily playing better. The team's winning, which is what's most important, but the quarterback isn't playing better.
Right. The misfires have been extremely noteworthy of late, and you wonder, a 36-year-old quarterback late in the season who has been as inaccurate as Rodgers has been the last couple of weeks, if maybe there is something nagging that he's dealing with too. That's at least what I think of, because, look, we've seen guys like Tom Brady and Drew Brees the last couple of seasons in their last few games of the year. They just haven't looked the same. Rodgers also is a little bit different from a mobility standpoint, Danny. That is a guy that I think we would all think of, not necessarily as a scrambler, but as someone who is going to find ways to get outside the pocket and extend plays. And this is a guy who actually was pretty good with his feet, taking off and running. From 2012 through 2018, he had between 20 and 25 scrambling first downs a year when he made 16 starts. This year, a 16-start season, he only has, excuse me, that's not a 16-start season, 15-start season, because he did have, there was a game where, wait, hang on, what am I talking about? I confused Patrick Mahomes with Matt Moore. My bad. He only had 9 scrambles for first downs this year in 16 games that he started, which is, I think, really noteworthy. It shows that I think maybe he's a guy that doesn't necessarily trust his feet in the same way that he used to. And I think that that is an element that means that from a big playmaking standpoint, he's just not going to be able to do as much.
Do you think he's like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon, where he's like, I'm getting too old for this stuff? Like, he sees an opportunity to scramble, he's like, nope, my body's just saying no. I'm not able to do this. It's possible that there's some of that. He's also maybe been coached to stay in the pocket more. Look, this is probably part of the growth process in that offense, which is we don't want you doing that.
And to go back to that Lethal Weapon reference, okay, Merton Riggs was a fantastic combination. Davante Adams is his Riggs, and Davante Adams is someone that I think can be used in a variety of different ways. But after that, I mean, we were making fun, Danny, of all the random Packer wide receivers that we can't exactly pronounce the names of, like, Geronimo Lizard?
Those are two different people. There's a lizard, and then there's Geronimo Allison.
And then there's...
Those are two different guys.
I
there's
know he's
Kumaro.
Not...
Kumaro yeah. has the gas station haircut. And then there's a hyphenated guy. I think it's... I call
Valdez
him Exxon
Scandling.
Valdez, but it's Valdez Scandling.
Oh, I got it right. Wow, how about that? I wasn't even 100% sure.
You tried to get it wrong, and you got it right.
I did.
Or as Joe Tessitore tried to brand him in a Monday night game, throwing to MVS. I was like, that guy definitely has not reached three initial standpoint. Like Jason Pierre-Paul, he could be JPP. Bonus points because it also sounded like OPP, but that was allowed. MVS, Valdez Scandling has not reached the point where I need to learn his initials.
I didn't want to get back into Joe Tessitore before this exciting Sunday game, but I still am annoyed with that decaf Metcalf nickname. Only a psycho drinks decaf coffee. I'm sorry.
He got a sponsorship out of it, so I don't think he has a problem with it.
Oh,
that's
did
a
he?
Great point.
Yeah, there's a decaf Metcalf out there now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good. You should be able to find a way to get paid.
And like 30,000 Twitter handles that changed their name to that, too.
But it's a bad nickname. It's like, oh, wow, this is weak coffee. This is coffee with no punch, with no oomph. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. This has not been the best season for Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, I took notice of this quote by Aaron Rodgers. He was asked about a Super Bowl appearance by Rob Donofsky. It's on my mind every day. That's why we play the game. That's why you put in the time in the offseason. Blah, 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 blah. I'm going to focus on the first part. It's on my mind every day.
Is Aaron Rodgers overlooking the Seahawks? Is he taking this playoff game for granted?
I do wonder if that pressure on Aaron Rodgers is a factor in this one as well. Because I bet that in a season like this, where he's not playing to the level that he used to in the past, I bet that there's an element of him that says, man, I might not have that much longer.
And so what do you do if you're the Seahawks? If that's what's happening, what do you do if you're the Seahawks? Do you sit back and see if he caves in under the pressure he's creating for himself? Do you come after him harder, trying to think that, okay, this guy can't move like he used to, so he's a sitting duck?
You have to respect him, and I actually think this is one of those situations where you don't kill yourself by sending more at him. I think it's one of those situations where you sit back and you hope that he misfires. And I know that's a weird thing to say about a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who in years past would pick you apart if you run that zone kind of coverage. But I I'm not saying do it all game long, but I think your hope is that Clowney can create pressure and can create space for other pass rushers to get after Aaron Rodgers, and that Rodgers continues to do what he's been doing the last couple of weeks, which is missing guys who are open. Coming up next, Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. When we look at this game, there is one, maybe two reasons that the Seahawks have a real good chance at this one. What is it? Danny's going to let you know next. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.